back to Strangecast, Player One Festival's Life is Strange podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Adnan. Co-host Adam is here. Adam, you here?
I'm here. I don't matter. I'm just some other guy here. Hello.
Yes. Well, yes, exactly. Because we have a special guest. She was on here last time. She threw a couple of punches at Adam. He's like been lingering on those 25 episodes ago. She's back.
Just
BAFTA nominated actor.
Yeah.
Life is Strange True Colors star. The Expanse actor. Erica Mori is here.
That was, I couldn't ask for a better intro. Can you write my LinkedIn bio? That would be
I could give it a shot. It would include punching Adam a couple of times, because he did feel that last time. There was a couple of jabs here and there.
I'd say that all the time. I'm like, she's from the East Coast. Like, she has a past life in the East Coast. Like, you can't just give those hits and be like, yeah, I'm just from the West Coast. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Just, I'm super chill. Just a super chill person from the West. You know,
I throwing a few jabs that hurt me and made me not sleep at night. It's fine.
That's all right. That's how you gain character. So, Adam. Yeah.
So, one question for you before we get started.
Yeah.
Did you see the Barbie movie, and what did you think about it?
I am actually in pink because I am going to the Barbie movie with friends after this.
Oh, yes. Sick.
I'm so excited. I tried to go opening weekend, but I definitely procrastinated on tickets and I couldn't go. I didn't, there weren't any, which is a great sign.
Oh,
great
I was going to say, because you're in Colorado. It? Of course. I saw Barbenheimer. I saw both of them. I like Barbie way more, a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should hope so.
Yeah. It's a good message. And also, Oppenheimer was a bit
bleak.
Yeah, bleak. Bleak's a good word for it. But Barbie, it's just like patriarchy. Go down by patriarchy. I'm not gonna spoil it, but yeah, have fun with it. That's all I'm gonna say.
As soon as I knew that there was like a choreographed dance scene, I was like, I'm fucking in. I'm in.
Yeah, there's a couple of them.
Perfect.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna love it. You're gonna love it.
I'm so excited. Yeah, I'm going with my roommate and a couple friends. We're gonna have a good time.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
That's really good. But also because Adam got in there as well, because I used to do the introduction part, which is, please do consider dropping subscribe on the channel, like the video, share with your friends. It helps keep up to date with the channel. And this podcast is always available on all podcast services. You're on Spotify with a video version, Apple Podcasts, we're on all of them. But yes, I just wanted Adam to like run the Barbie conversation, but nice way to start that anyway. Erica, this is completely left field because like last time we spoke and we spoke off podcast, I believe there was a part of Sherlock Holmes you were going to be working on Broadway, and that included something with Anastasia Davidson as well. How did that go? Yeah.
It went great. It wasn't on Broadway. It was up in Boulder, Colorado, which...
Yeah. The Broadway of the Midwest.
Broadway of the West. You
I was
going to
say, is Colorado just west? Like, it's not really Midwest. It's just...
No, I mean, we are lumped with the West, although we are pretty Middle West.
Like Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, that's just kind of like its own sector.
Exactly.
You know?
Like,
does it have a
its
name?
Own it's cute just... little sector in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
Just
like visitors beware sector.
Yeah. So it was in Boulder. It was so much fun. It's a play by Kate Hamill, and it was actually still in manuscript phase. So this was the sort of second new play that I've done with Stace, and it was Miss Holmes and Miss Watson, apartment 2B. So Holmes and Watson were female, and then there was myself and a male actor who did all of the other characters. And I was like super excited because I was like, this is so cool. Like, I don't have the majority of the texts. I'll probably have like time for snacks during. I love like a good break during a show. Like I did Arcadia where I played Chloe. Barely on stage. Prefer that. She's just there to be like chaotic and thirsty throughout the play. And then I did Steel Magnolias and I played Shelby, and spoiler alert, she's not in the last act of the play because she doesn't make it. So it was like super cool. I was like downstairs getting out of my wig, eating Twizzlers, being like, I'll see you guys at curtain call. Perfect. So yeah, that was my hope when I was offered this, when I was offered the role. So I played like Irene Adler and Mrs. Hudson and a dead guy in a bathtub, which was the best part. Yeah.
Were you eating snacks in the bathtub as the dead guy, or were you just dead at that point?
There was no time for snacks. It was, I mean, I feel like that was, I got the rug pulled out from under me a little bit. That was misrepresented because I was always like frantically changing into another character or getting all of my stupid props, being like, talk slower on stage, go slower. it was a very physical performance. It was a lot of fun though. And it was the only other time I've played multiple characters in the same show was for Christmas Carol, where pretty much everybody except for Scrooge is playing multiple characters. And that one, I don't know, it felt a little different. This one, I think I was talking to you about, I had to have different dialects for Mrs. Hudson. So like my three characters, I put them on like a spectrum of like who has the most power. So like Irene Adler is like at the highest one. So her RP was like really crisp, like pretty close to like royal RP, super, super posh. And then Mrs. Hudson was at the other end. And I think you had recommended Birmingham as the, as an accent.
Oh,
absolutely not. I was like, who has time? Who has time? This is crazy. I was watching, what was it? Oh, Downton Abbey.
Oh boy.
And I was like, I don't have time for this. Even my dialect instructor was like, you don't have time for this, sweetie. You have all of these other characters that you need to flesh out.
Yeah.
But it was so fun. Stace was just, that was a freaking masterclass in what it is to be a professional. She was so sensational. It was really fun. I really like working with her. I think we've got really good chemistry, and more than anything, like, oh God, I trust the shit out of her. I think especially in live theater, like you come in with your own circumstance and as like a person, and you try and shed that so that you can be the character. Yeah. But you know, you have some days where you're not as on as others, and I trust her to be like so locked in and engaged that if I'm at like 80%, she can carry the rest. And like, I think she trusts me vice versa. And that's something we really honed in during 14 Funerals, which was the first play that we'd done together. But so, it was really fun. Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Anybody that's like listening to this might be an aspiring actor, voice actor, whatever have you, right? I wouldn't say you were an overnight success, but like in a lot of people's terms, you took some acting classes like out of your full-time job, and then you get the role of Alex Chen, and then onward and forward. But your journey is just one story out of many, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of, not even just advice, but what kind of goals should somebody set for themselves in terms of success in the acting world? So when a lot of people go into acting, they might be like, I'm going to make it into the movies, right?
Yeah.
And that's way too far ahead. What would you say is like good goals for people to like attain to, you would say?
That's a great question. And I think it's a really important one if you are trying to make this your career or a healthy part of your career, because it's an industry that I think there's so much that you can't control. I work hard. I think I definitely put in the work and I have a passion for it, but the role of Alex and me getting that was largely luck, right? It was luck that I was in that acting class and Sylvia Gregory, who was the casting director for True Colors, was my instructor, you know. It was, I think, it just, these things, it's like right place, right time, for a lot of it. And in that sort of industry, that sort of context, I think you have to pin your success on something other than the roles that you get. So, and I think you have to really love the work. If it's theater, I think you have to love rehearsal or you're going to burn out, right? I think you have to love coming to the work over and over and over and over again and trying to find like new things about it. I've never done a run longer than five weeks. But like Broadway, you could be doing this for months, for years. Like, and how do you come to the material fresh? One of my directors and really good friends, who she directed Stace and I in, God, I think she's directed me like three times. Her name's Rebecca Romali. And she told me about Christmas Carol. She was like, I know a lot of you have probably done Christmas Carol or seen Christmas Carol a bunch of times, but for someone in every single audience, this is the first time that they're going to see it. Or the first time they're going to see it this way. And I've heard that said about Shakespeare as well. Like, yeah, it's this like massive canon and you read it in school and whatever, but at some point you saw it for the first time and, or you saw it and it was magic for you for the first time. And so I think that's a really healthy way to continue to find like nuance and put forth your effort in something like theater, where you're like, okay, so this is like my sixth show of the week, and this is, you know, the millionth time that I'm saying this line. But remembering sort of like who it's for is has been really helpful to me. And so loving the process, I think, is really, really helpful. And finding success in, now I can do this new accent, or I have done plays in rep before, and that's a muscle that I didn't know that I had or that I needed. Or I have been an understudy, maybe like one of the most thankless roles, positions that you could have in theater, until they need you. It kind of feels like in American football, the kicker, right? If you fuck up when they need you, exactly. If you fuck up when they need you, like, huge deal, huge deal. That's what you're going to be known for. Like kind of thankless. So I think it's finding how you are developing as an artist and hanging your hat on that.
By the way, I've got to say this as well. We like last like 20 episodes, we moved to a PG rating on like Spotify, etc. In the first 12 minutes, she's dropped like three F bombs. No. Do you know what though? As well, like I knew as well before I even started this like session, I knew like this episode was going to happen with you as well. I'm like, I'm not even going to say it to, because like it just naturally has to flow from my mouth. And, like even the last episode, I did it by accident, I bleeped it out, and when you dropped it 3 minutes in, I'm like, I'm not even going to try it in this episode. So feel free to keep dropping the F-bombs. This will be a marked explicit episode.
Well, you should have told me, you know, when we were just shooting the stuff.
Yeah.
Before we started.
No, go ahead, Erica. Just rolling. Just ruin our reputation. This is why we don't invite you back on, Erica.
I knew that there was a reason. You knew it.
No, it's honestly exactly. Fine, because like I can't have like an Erica Mori conversation without F-bombs. So like that is... And I'll probably be able to speak freely myself, but obviously, like Life is Strange, we might talk about the end. I'm not too sure. We've beaten that subject like a dead horse. Yeah. And like, there's many episodes you can go watch with Erica as well. But on this point, we want to bring her on because of The Expanse. And obviously, me and Adam have been following it. We played the first two episodes. Cat came out of the bag, where Erica is involved in The Expanse. And more so importantly, we just want to talk about the expanse. So Erica, like, let's go back to the beginning. Like, how did you end up on this project? Because like with Deck Nine, it feels like Deck Nine and Erica Mori is like Johnny Depp and Tim Burton at the minute. It's like two peas in a pod. I feel like they have like a cardboard cutout of you at Deck Nine Studios. Yeah. So like, first of all, how did you get involved in this project?
Yeah, I mean, I feel so lucky that Deck Nine and I continue to work together. I mean, we were talking about sort of like professional fits before we started recording. And I think that Deck Nine for me is definitely a really nice fit. It feels like an artistic and creative home, which, you know, I'm really, really grateful that the first studio I worked with has felt like that. And so they bring me in as a reader when they have auditions. And so that was actually what happened here is they were casting for The Expanse. They had the IP. They didn't know if they had Kara yet, but they knew that they wanted a drummer-led character and a drummer-led game. And so they were like, we don't know if we're going to get the Kara G. Mm-hmm. So we have to have a backup. We have to have, like, if we can't get her.
So speaking of an understudy.
Yeah, well, an understudy, but it was also like, we'll write a game for a new character. Like a new character in that universe. And so I think it was happening at the same time. They were actively trying to get in touch with Kara and her agents to see if she was even interested in something like this, and also having auditions saying like, hey, we know we're going to need a body. Kara lives in LA, and shooting for video games is not like shooting for film and TV, right? It's very, very, it's a very elongated process. And so I was brought in as just a reader, and they were reading for Maya and Drummer, because for the vertical slice, and they wanted Maya and Drummer content to push through. And so we were casting for both of those, and I was on the other side of the room, providing those people who are auditioning somebody to read off of. And so both Maya and Drummer were interspersed, and obviously they weren't called Maya and Drummer. It was like Cassie and Maria or something. And I had read all of the sides, and you can tell when they bring in actors, like there's a type. And so they were clearly looking for sort of a Hispanic or Latin woman for Maya. And then for Drummer, I was just seeing a lot of variants. I was like, okay, my age range is here. My ethnicity is here. My talent level, I think, is represented here.
Yeah, if anything, overqualified.
I was like, what's going on? And I mean, in my head, we can like create our own little stories for ourselves. I was like, I must have really effed up during True Colors and pissed off the wrong person if they don't want to bring me in for an audition. And then I was like, but why am I here as a reader? And why are they asking my opinion after each audition about like the people who are auditioning and fit and whatever? Like, it would be me, Webb, and Corwin in that room, and there was a place for like in their notes for my opinion, and I was like, this something did not up. And I'm not a very like shy or passive person, so at the end of the day,
really jinx.
Because it is
really we didn't know that.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I was like, hey, I am a little confused. Like, don't get me wrong, I love that I get to see behind the curtain about how this gets made. And I love doing these auditions, honestly, because I learn so much mm-hmm. being that reader in auditions where I'm like, holy shit, that was an amazing read. I didn't even hear that read in my head when I looked through this side. Or, huh, that's interesting. I wonder what, you know, it would be like if that actor changed it just a little bit. Like, what would that alchemy be like between the two of us reading? So I learn a ton, which is why anytime Deck Nine's like, Eric, are you? I'm like, yes, I'm available. Yeah. Like, at any point that you need me to be involved in this, I'm there. But yeah, just sat down with Webb and Corwin, and I was like, is there a reason that you guys didn't ask me to audition? It seems like I would at least be like an interesting option for this.
And see, they were I imagine you saying all this with your fists up the entire time. Like, is there a reason why?
Well, I was still operating on like, well, maybe you were not fun to work with. And I would have wanted that feedback too. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah, because I imagine this industry is just like, you're always thinking that, oh, your role's cut, you gotta find a new job.
Sure.
Like, because you want that residency essentially mm-hmm. at Deck Nine. So like, you don't want to lose that.
Right.
It's always going through your head.
Well, and like, Webb and Corwin are my friends. You know, like, it's not just so like, there's the professional aspect, but I am friends with quite a few people, quite a few devs at Deck Nine. Like, I think mm-hmm. they're some of like the smartest, kindest, most driven people I've ever met. And so it was both, right? Like, I need to know if this was like a professional faux pas on my part during the two something years that we were filming True Colors. Mm-hmm. But I also like want to make sure that we're okay, just from like a friendship perspective. And they were like, oh my, we were devastated when we didn't get your initial audition. And I was like, come again?
What? What?
Was it?
What?
And they were like, yeah, we sent out a call for, they have like their process, and they just send out a call to all of the agencies in Colorado because they like to cast locally.
Yeah.
And we just figured like, oh, maybe you had another project, or you didn't enjoy working with us.
What?
Yeah. And so it was just like this huge misunderstanding. It turns out that my agent at the time, I had a local agent, had decided not to submit my name. And so there was, I was so, so grateful that like this all came to light, and Webb and Corm were like, I think this was like a Tuesday. They were like, can you audition on Friday?
Yeah.
And I was like, frick yeah.
you can't say the swear words.
Well, I mean, I keep looking at you being like, are you going to have to now. Like, pull this? Yeah.
I gave up on editing about 15 minutes ago. It's so okay. Please continue. Just,
yeah.
So we're just going to do this.
In between that, you also said piss off as well at one point. So I was like, yeah, we've lost the, but no, continue, please.
Okay, great. I was like, yeah, I will absolutely be like, I'm going to be ready. And also, I had been in the room for 2 days,
mm-hmm.
which, and doing the thing that I do when I'm watching people work, which is like, mm-hmm. I'm going to take that. That was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Ooh, this actually seeds, like, say it this way. Or I wonder what it would be like if you said it this way. And so, I mean, I definitely had a bunch of calls after that with my agent to be like, hey, I just kind of need to know what happened. And I will say that, again, to people who are getting into this industry, already in this industry, new to the industry, you got to be your own advocate. I think that a lot of times actors are just happy with what they're given, and are like, oh, I like whatever you think. No, fuck that. Like, you are your own person. You are your best advocate, and you should have a team that is lockstep with you. And I actually have an amazing agent based out of Louisiana that I feel that with. And they're mostly like film and TV. But I was really like shocked and disappointed that there had been this huge miscommunication. And so I ended up calling my local agent to just be like, hey, this is what I heard. I want to confirm with you, like, I'm not going to make any assumptions because this is all like hearsay. We just need to talk to make sure that we're on the same page. And ultimately I ended up parting ways with them like the next day, just because like we were not on the same page about the type of team and relationship that we needed to have. And it was like no hate to that agency at all. It's just... I think that they like do really good work. They rep some incredible talent here. It was just not a good fit. I think my schedule didn't allow me to submit for as many things as they needed because I was on set working. It was just not the right relationship, and I really did trust myself when I was like, this feels wrong. And so it was wrong. But after doing due diligence, the key part is like not being reactive, but being curious and saying, I was curious with Webb and Corwin about why I wasn't on their list to audition for this. I was curious with my agent. And I think it really did serve. I think it served everybody in the end. And so they brought me in, and I actually came into the audition and I was like, hey, I know that this is the read that you all expect, because there was a monologue and it was drummer, or this character, addressing her troops, going into like this, you know, the Battle of the 300, where you're probably going to lose or whatever. You had just lost like your captain in the previous engagement, and I was stepping up. You're stepping up into this new leadership role, and you have to address the elephant in the room. And so they were directing like really militaristic, and imagine that you're talking to like 500 people, and they had written it based off of drummer's speech on the brig, you know. Oye, Beltalder. You know, like that was what they had designed it around, because that's such an iconic drummer speech. Like, it gives me chills every time I watch it. And I watched it a lot because I had to get Kara's drummer's voice. Because she,
I don't envy you for that part, because like this is like my first introduction to The Expanse. Like, and like just to see what Kara G has done for her voice, I love it. Like every time she talks, I'm just like in awe at her.
Yeah, she's next level. I like that was how everybody had been doing the monologue, because that was the direction that they were given. And so I came into my audition and I was like, I'm gonna do it like that. Totally. I'm gonna give you that read. But I wanna give you a different read. That was interesting to me when I was rehearsing, and it was way more intimate. I was like, I'm gonna give this speech as if it's to like a crew of five. And so like the intimacy of being a peer is, so it just changed the read a ton. And then motherfucking Stefan Frost, who is also another one of my friends, and he knows that I was just like, so what the fuck about this. They liked that read so much that they had another callback with a couple people to have them do the type of read that I had done.
Wow.
To see if anybody could do it better than I could. And how embarrassing would it have been if somebody had been?
Oh my God. Because that's the thing. It's just like, I'm very, very, very amateur in terms of writing and directing. I've worked with a couple of voice actors already, and there's just some reads where, like, I'll write something and there's a person that reads it so well that I'm just like, that was better than what I ever could have imagined in my head. Like, thank you for that. Because I worked with, especially Kylie Brown, I worked with her.
Yeah.
And she, like, just killed her lines. So,
yeah.
No, I like very, very small percentage. I know where they're coming from. We're just like, oh my God, can somebody top that? Go ahead. Try to top that.
Well, and I get it. Like, Frost was like, we want the best person for the role, which I deeply, deeply respect. I think that is respectful of your performers too. Right.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I don't want to get a role if I was like second or third best. Like, I want to get the role because I was the best one that you saw to do what you need done.
Yeah. And more times than not, like, I will write something specifically for a specific person.
That's the dream. Like, that's the dream.
Yeah. It's just like, if I was to write something, like, if I were to cast, like, you, Erica, like, all of my lines, like, okay, how would Erica say this line? Okay, so write a bunch of curse words.
Yeah.
Just like,
yeah. Only
sailor mouth. Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. It's just like as many as in different languages, even.
Yeah.
But no, like,
yeah, like, she's going to love them all. She's going to love them all.
All of them.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, you would write it for that specific person. So, of course, yeah, like, you want the best actor to fill that sort of role.
And I think it was also that I like really respected and trusted the people who were in the room, and I had years of a relationship with them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that every single person that we saw in the audition did exactly what they were supposed to do, right? They followed the brief. They were totally coachable and able to take direction. And I had a little bit of a leg up because I had been on the other side of these scenes and of these auditions. And this was also very indicative of the way that I was thankfully able to work with this team during True Colors, is they were very open to my being like, hey, I'm like so excited to do the line as like written, and I always have the line as written, but like as directed, you know, with the vibe or the tone. But is it okay if we do one? There's just like something, there's a read in my head that is like an itch that I've got to scratch, and would you indulge? And thank God, you know, I think that they also trust and respect me to be like, pop off. let's see what it is. And, you know, it doesn't work every time, but I think it really did work this time because we're seeing Drummer. This is obviously a prequel to the TV series of The Expanse. And so Kara and Frost and Zach and John and Iris, the writers, we had Kamina camp one time when Kara was out because she was pregnant, and I had to do episode 4 for her because she was doing the most metal thing, which was shoving a child out of her body.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I just like the description of it, like, so metal, shoving a human being right out of her.
It is metal.
Yeah, it is.
Kara's like, up. I think this is the most metal thing that you can do is as a human is have a baby. And I was like, you're so right.
Yeah. Oh, she said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's awesome though.
And totally so we agree. Had like a little Kamina camp to really talk about, like, okay, so we have the sort of the understanding of who she is in the 6 seasons of The Expanse. Now we get the opportunity to be like, let's show the audience maybe some of who she was before that informs how she got there. And so like she's not quite as hard-edged or jaded, or, you know, like there's more there is potentially more of a softness. And so we really were like looking to explore that, and I think that is a big reason why that I'm just imagining here that why that softer read might have been so compelling is because you see the dynamics of this character, like one after the other, right? I'm gonna do the militant to my, you know, my army of 500 read, and then I'm gonna do the one where maybe I'm just talking to you, maybe there is no artifice on top of this. I don't have to pretend to be this leader. I'm a different type of leader right now. And I think that's what's so compelling about Drummer as a character is she has such depths and like wells of experience and emotion. And I think Kara is like a really singular talent. And she was able to bring this character who I didn't realize was not supposed to be as prominent as Drummer became because Kara made her so compelling and rich and multifaceted and I mean great choice for player character. For sure.
Now how familiar are you with the story of the have you read the books or are you more into the shows?
I didn't read the books. I watched the show. And it's so funny, I had actually watched the pilot years ago, like 2017 maybe. And I was like, not for me.
Yeah, same.
Like everybody died. Not for me. I don't know. And it was Drummer, Bobby, and if I'm being honest, Amos. I was hot under the collar for Amos. Oh my God. I was like, as I was watching it, I would be like live texting with Frost or with Zach, the game director and the performance director, just thirsting.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Oh yeah.
If you don't know, listeners, just Google Amos from The Expanse and go off queen.
Oh my God, he's
no,
like,
I don't blame you at all.
So so much that's compelling, but I really did get pulled in by Drummer. I thought that there was like something obviously like compelling, but approachable about it. And those tend to be the types of characters that I get is the one with walls up, but you can see that like pinhole into their heart and into like where their vulnerability is. And so, I mean, in the end, it became a really good fit. But that was a very long and meandering way to answer your question. Is that?
Well, I wanted you to answer it.
I like fell
long
into
and meandering.
Being involved in the Expanse in like a real way by luck.
That was
by luck.
Story. Okay, so we'll continue on, and there might be a little bit of a hiccup here. We've had a couple of issues live recording. I don't know how the edit's going to go, but it should be all right. And just for context as well, Eric, if we disappear off the call and stuff, we're still here, so you'll be able to see us. For the story, it was great as well. I was able to listen to all that, so very insightful. Well, one of the things that caught me with the project as well with The Expanse, and Adam spoke about, you know, the background of all the characters and everything you could learn about it. Mr. Webb Pickersgill wasn't the performance director on this. He was, you know, round and about for Deck Nine, but we have one, Zachary Andrew, who's leading the performance directing. What was it like working under him, and how did he rate your Meisner as well?
Well, unfortunately for me, this Joker actually went and specifically studied Meisner for like 2 years.
No way.
In LA, and like I can't tell you how disappointed I was, because otherwise I think he's pretty cool.
It's funny because like when we talked with Stace, who's just like loves Meisner and
he
just
loves it,
talked about it passionately, like, Adam, let me explain to you the beauty of Meisner, whereas you come on, I was like, man, Meisner,
Meisner.
I hope anybody, yeah,
I just I didn't like it. I would give it another shot. If my like dating history is any indication, I'll try anything like 3, 4, or 5 times before I'm like, nope, this doesn't work. But yeah, it's not my thing. I also, it's just not my thing. So unfortunately, Zachary Andrews has a lot of experience in Meisner. But he was, he is an actor. And so his entire career is actually in acting. And it's really funny that we never crossed paths. There were many, many times in, you know, Colorado theater where we could have. There was an instance where we were both in shows running at the same time in theaters right next to each other, separated by a wall. Never met. Like, we just didn't meet. We actually didn't meet until his final callback or audition for the performance director role, because Webb and the team knew that they needed another pair of hands on deck. And so first time I met him was he was directing me and Rihanna on The Volume as part of his like final callback or final audition. And he's excellent. He's like a director for actors because he knows how to be directed. And
I'm actually just looking at his IMDb page. I'm like, have I seen him in certain things? But unfortunately,
so he's
not.
Like a classically trained, he has a master's in theater. He went to Kansas State for that.
Oh wow.
So he has like, he's legitimate. He has like actual training. It was cool. Like, I mean, obviously Webb is a wonderful director. He got some amazing performances in both Before the Storm and in True Colors. And so it was really interesting, again, like leading with curiosity, having somebody brand new, because I like trust Webb. I know how I work with Webb. And all I can say is like Webb and the team did a bang up job hiring Zach. I think he knows how to speak the lingo of actors, and he's one of the hardest workers that I've ever met. Like, he really spends so much time with the script and knowing the beats, and he's right there on The Volume with us. This was an interesting shoot because we still had COVID protocols. So if you weren't on The Volume, you had to be masked. And so Issa, who plays Maya, actually she painted like a Hannibal Lecter mask for him that he would like wear.
That's awesome.
But he's like so expressive, and you know, you can only see half of his face. And he was like, I'm smiling in case you didn't know. I'm smiling. You're doing a really good job trying to, you know, make sure that he was communicating well. But really, really strong, really strong director.
Let me ask you something again, like kind of like a side quest question here. Side quest. That's all I am. Just a walking side quest. So you say that, like, yeah, like I see your tone where like, wow, this guy is legitimate. He studied under Kansas State. He's a real deal actor.
Yeah.
I struggle with that as a musician, where like, you know, I do Casta Garden stuff, which is more like comedic, kind of lo-fi, kind of a weird genre. But then I come across like people who are going in for composition majors, and oh, I'm like a real deal, like I'm an actual composer. My question for you, if you feel the same way as I do, whenever you meet somebody like that who's like the real deal in your mind, how hardcore do you get in imposter syndrome? Like, does it affect you at all, or do you just kind of like learn from them more or less?
I definitely see it as an opportunity to learn. I've certainly met people who, I mean, it's kind of like if you have an MBA, And I'm like, well, I have an MBA, and so I know more about business. And you're like, shut the fuck up. that's rare. Sorry, not to like shit on MBAs, but that's rarely
true. No, go for it. Yeah.
And I think that the same thing about sort of having being like classically trained, I think that it is like a huge leg up. Right. But it is not the only path to being successful or talented or hardworking or to know the industry or to break into the industry. Like, and I've met people who think that they're a little better because they are classically trained and they've done summer stock and blah, 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 blah. That's definitely not Zach's vibe. I don't think that he would have really fit in at Deck Nine if it had been. That's more to say that he has like a pretty big bag of tricks to pull from when working with actors, right? Like we all were coming in with like varying levels of knowledge of either the character or the world or acting in general or acting on a volume and wearing all that crazy shit on your body. And so he was, I think it was really beneficial that he had a lot of different tools in his toolkit to be like, okay, so this is going to work for you, but not for you. And it was, I mean, I sat in on pretty much every single shoot, basically watching Kara. Not weird. Being able to
just pick up
see
on
how he worked with a bunch of different actors, and it was very cool to see.
Do you have any advice for people who do struggle with imposter syndrome? You see it more as a learning opportunity, but
that
what would
cat
your advice
is
be?
Popping off.
I'm gonna let you guys carry the conversation on. This cat is gonna like ruin this podcast otherwise. So Adam, continue, please, whilst I go and feed him and maybe not
go
him,
for it.
Go on.
I think in terms of imposter syndrome, I definitely do feel it because I don't have any training and I still feel very new because I am. I'm super new to acting in this world. But I'm just so fucking curious about like how it works and how you can come to the work in different ways. And so that's been, I think, a trait that I have really leaned on. I will say that I actually had like an imposter syndrome panic attack when I was at the BAFTAs, and we did for the lead performer category, we did like a pre-interview. And none of us had met yet. And so it was all via Zoom, but there was a moderator and all of us were there. And I mean, we went around the horn talking about how we came to this role, what our experience was, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, like Jason Kelly, Jennifer Hale, Jane, like all of these people have so much experience. And I was like, well, this is my first thing. And I mean, I had gone to Paris before I went to London for the awards ceremony. And I, I mean, I was having like a real crisis of self being like, what am I doing here? I don't have this resume. Like I could only dream of having this resume. And I think that was when I felt the most crushed by it, was when it should have been the most celebratory. And it was, you know, some good friends. One of them was Zach, who kind of, and my mom, who like kind of helped to talk me down off of that ledge. And so I think having good people around you, cause you can't always see yourself clearly, like rarely, I think rarely do we see ourselves clearly. And so having good people around you that you trust, right? When they say like, the sky is blue, it's not red, like you're saying it is, it's blue. To have those relationships to fall back on, to get you out of your own head is really, really, really important. because it's a shitty time up in here, you know, sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just, it's incredibly, like you said, like, you have so many people that are in your peer section that's just like, oh my God, like, I don't have their story. I don't have their experience.
Yeah, I idolize the people that I was nominated with.
Like you said, Jennifer Hale was there.
I idolize them. I think that they, and they are my friends. Like, we have had, like, Zooms and conversations and emails, and we still keep in touch. I would say, like, of the entire experience of True Colors, which was incredible, sort of like soup to nuts. One thing I didn't anticipate was that I would have friends who are also, like, peers who are doing the damn thing, like Neil Newborn, who, you know, just is Baldur's Gate. I mean, we're playing as him right now.
Are you playing Baldur's Gate?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is it as good as everybody says?
It's pretty good.
Damn.
Yeah. But being like, holy shit, I'm so proud. And Maggie's in it, Jane's in it. Like, it's just so exciting to see. Like, John McLaren is doing, like, Canadian Hallmark movies all over the place. Yeah. Like, it's just so cool to see. Ozzy was in a Super Bowl commercial. Jason, you know, I've seen them on TV, and it's just so amazing to be able to, like, text them.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, congratulations. You should be so proud of yourself, because this is incredible. You're doing it. You're doing it.
Mm-hmm. No,
Erica Mori.
Yes.
Sorry, just to segue into this as well, because, like, and apologies for, like, all the issues that we've had so far. Is my cat has currently disappeared, so don't worry. He'll come back in like 20 minutes for more food.
Yeah.
But, because you bring up all those names, because obviously the main prolific name you're working on the project with is Kara G. And, like, I have, like, untold admiration for her after seeing Drummer. Like, I want to watch the TV show. I've said to people, like, my current hobby is, like, collecting lists of things I'm meant to watch but not watching at the minute, and the Expanse is on it. But this is, like, my first introduction to it, and, like, I've really become invested in Kamina Drummer because, like, I love her performance so much. And then you came in for this, because I initially assumed that you'd come onto the project because she was heavily pregnant and you were doing some of the scenes that she might not physically be able to, but obviously learned differently. But did you work with her during the time on the same set, and how did you find working with her as well?
She's a fucking delight. she's amazing. She is, I would say, she's one of those people like Stace, you know, like Han, where I watch them work and it's like a toss up. Do I learn more watching them, or do I learn more on my feet myself? Mm-hmm. And I think those are, like, really rare people. But she is this character, right? She made this character. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I really took away from her was how, like, endlessly generous she was with Drummer, with her knowledge of the Expanse, with the story, with the world, with Belters, how protective she was, sort of about not just Drummer, but this world. She was so good. She was so good. There were several times when we would be doing scenes. I'm thinking about one in episode 3 where
we're not, like, off that point yet.
I know, but Zach yelled cut, and there was just silence after it, because she was so powerful. She was so powerful. And I could talk all day about just her talent, just pure talent as a performer and a contributor artistically to this process. But I think that would be doing a disservice to just who she is as a person. I think that generosity is just who she is. She is so funny, so irreverent. If you brought her on here, she would, and we had, like, a tally for who curses more. I don't know who would win.
Really?
Yeah, she's I mean, she's a force. I am not surprised that.
And where is she from? Is she from
She's from
West
Canada.
Well?
Yeah.
She's from Canada?
Yeah.
And she curses that much?
Oh, yeah.
But they're also nice.
I mean, Deck Nine has been releasing these like little, Deck Nine and Telltale have been releasing these like little snippets of Kara and Frost playing the game.
Yeah.
Little potty mouth.
Golly. Gosh, yeah, because like, I'm in North Dakota, so we're like, we get a lot of Canadians down here, and just like, I can't imagine them cursing like that much, because like, they're so pleasant, and just like,
it's because Kara G's been spending time around. It's because Kara G's been spending time
Yeah, exactly.
Aubrey. That's where she's got the cussing from. It's like, it's completely
That's right.
From that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, I think she came with that.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that I was going to be standing in for her as much because until after they'd shot episode one, and Kara was like, oh yeah, it'll be like a film where we shoot everything in like a couple of months, and then I'm gonna go have my baby. And Tech and I was like, oh
yeah. Oh my god,
we would love that. Unfortunately, those things aren't written yet. So,
yeah. Wow.
So that's when I knew that I would be stepping in, and I was spending a lot of times. We did Kamina Camp, like I referred to before, and I have never been allowed into somebody's process as an actor before, and she brought me in to how she made Drummer, and it was fascinating because our processes are so different. Like this woman is methodical. She's a machine on how she prepares for a role. And I mean, I'm stealing a lot of it because it makes good sense, but
right.
Never before had I've never asked Stace, like, how did you build the character of Sherlock Holmes? Like, soup to nuts, what did you do? And so during Kamina Camp...
I've never heard that phrase before, by the way. Soup to
soup
nuts?
Soup to nuts? Really?
Never heard of that. No.
Look it up. I'm pretty sure it's one of those, like, irritating consultant phrases that I have. But yeah, during Kamina Camp, she was giving me... She just walked me through it, like... This is how I would come at this line. And it was a really weird and unique role that I was playing because my client, my job was like, was to do it like Kara, right? Like there was no way that I was going to deliver something that was not in the palette of actions of Kara as Drummer. Right. We had like a little more wiggle room because this is a younger Drummer. Like, we're not locked into necessarily what canon is, or we have to say like, oh, well, Drummer did this at the last season of in season six of the Amazon Prime show.
Yeah.
And so that has to inform how we didn't have any of those boundaries. And like, Kara had some really strong opinions, and she was always open to suggestions. And she was so generous with this character. She was never like territorial. It never became like a weird pissing match. She was just like so eager to have me there and happy to have me there. She mentioned at one point, she was like, I think that Drummer is better for having us both. Which was an amazing thing to hear. Because I care a lot about this character too. A lot. I mean, I care as much about this character as I do about Alex.
How different of a role is this compared to stuff that you've done? Because like, as we know with Kamina Drummer, it's like she's just so like hard and like compared to other stuff that you've done, and even on like on Theatre as well, it's very different. Like, how did you find adapting to that? And also, because like we follow him on Twitter and he follows us as well, is Stephen Frost, who will be like, you know, waltzing around during his sessions and stuff. How was it like feeding back off of him and then doing the stuff? I feel like we're in for something here, but God.
Honestly, Kamina is the type of character that I tend to get asked to read for or asked to audition for. The, like, walls up, hard-edged. In fact, like, that's who Alex was at first.
Really?
Like, the very, very, like, nascent beginnings of Alex. She was more like Chloe than the Alex that she became. Which, it's, I mean, maybe I'm just, like, I'm good at playing, like, someone who's kind of an asshole until you break down a couple walls and see that they are incredible, like, what their vulnerability is. And so Kamina Drummer really did feel within my wheelhouse, except for how still she is. I talk with my hands. I have a ton of vocal inflection, right? And Kamina is still as fuck. I mean, when she moves, it's for a specific reason. And if she moves fast, you better get out of the fucking way. And so modeling like Kara's, like, we talked a lot about carriage. I was like, where do you hold your weight? Obviously we're also dealing with like mag boots and fucking space also. But like, what is your posture like? And she told me in the beginning, she was like, there were days on set because I had that like such like erect militaristic posture that my shoulders hurt. My shoulders, wow, and my back hurt just because of like how she was holding herself. And so like the physicality of it was super, super interesting because like the stunts could not be me doing the stunts. They had to be drummer doing the stunts. Like, how does she reach for things? How does she sit down? How does she like, even, this was, I fucking love Kara. She was like, hey, a note on, cause she was watching me during Kamina camp doing the walk, et cetera. And she was like, hey, just step, like, don't rock back and step when you step forward. Like, drummer does not hesitate, not even with like a quick shift of weight. She's always ready. She's always ready for that step forward. And like these little like nuances are so helpful for me as a performer to build character and also to match character for Kara's performance of drummer, because she obviously is primary. So like in those shoots, I was watching Kara constantly, like shifting into drummer. Yeah. And every little movement that she did, it was really helpful.
That's wild. Yeah. So that, like, for you, would you say that like it was definitely more of a learning process? Are you like all at the ready? Like, yeah, I'm ready to learn. Or there's some stages where like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, were you nervous about it at all?
I was so nervous about it. I was so nervous about it because I think it's a sensitive thing to come to the character of an actor who is still living and is also doing the performance. Like I wanted to be like respectful and on my game and like well versed in the world, and Kara definitely made it easy because she was so welcoming about it all. I think we worked really well together, and like her notes were not to like say Stefan or Stefan, it's weird calling him that, his name is Frost. Frosters. Now, is or it
like a Mortal Kombat character?
Yeah.
Is it pronounced Stefan or Steven?
It's Stefan. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, look we'd at be that, calling him Stephen.
Yeah, that's yeah, right. Good old Steve. But yeah, like the notes from Kara were primary. I was like, I am hearing what you're saying as well, but I'm going to stack rank this shit. And Kara's note goes first. And so that was cool. And to like, I think I've answered like half of your question. Frost
Steven
is a real hoot on the volume. he's I think we're like maybe neck and neck. I think maybe he has been more characters in the game than I have, which is saying something. He did body for Rayan for a lot of episode one because we had a COVID outbreak of certain members of the cast, and Kara was only out for a week. And so he did like the initial VO for Cox's voice. He's like a big kid. He's a big kid. He when he was breaking the story to me, he did all of the voices. Like, he's the best dad. He has two kids, two sons. And like, I bet it's just fucking hoot in that house.
Yeah, right.
Because Frost is like a kid himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
God. And a great.
Do you call him Frost?
I do. Actually, you know what I call him? I call him Skeeter Denise. He's what? Skeeter Denise in my phone, because there was one day on set where we were talking about your porn name. Yeah, this is definitely not PG-13, so mark that shit up.
We lost that a long time ago.
But we were talking about our porn name being like the street that you grew up on and your first pet's name, and so we were all like batting him back and forth. He was like, oh yeah, mine's pretty good, mine's Skeeter Denise. And I was like, Skeeter Denise it is.
Yeah,
he's got a lot of names. Yeah. A lot of names. But
wow,
he's a great director. I think I've seen, right, like I've gotten experience or been able to observe a handful of game directors, and fucking thankless job. I'll tell you right now, I would never want that job. Jesus Christ. But there's like a certain je ne sais quoi that I have seen successful game directors have. I think that Zach Garris has it, and I think that Frost has it. And I like really, really, really like the way that Frost leads, because I think he's like really curious and he knows what's cool, and I trust that he knows what's cool.
That's cool.
Skeeter's a good guy.
Yeah. Skeeter's a good guy.
Yeah.
Skeeter's a good guy. I might actually tweet him and say, hey, Skeeter, you're
right. Yeah. Like, excuse me, Mr. Denise.
Mr. Denise, like, how did you know?
Erica, because I obviously had a time conscious, we've been going for a while, but you did a lot of mocap stuff, and we're only on two episodes, so just FYI, like, is there any favorite scenes that you've done so far, like, or any interaction you had with the other actors? Because I one of my particular favorite characters outside of Kamina Drummer is Khan. I love Khan.
Yes!
Like, Khan is like my spirit animal now. I love when she has a cigar and she's just like,
she's such a badass. And yeah. I auditioned for Khan because I was like, Khan is like, she's the
that
best character.
Amazing.
I don't have the gravel. Like, Lily is a fucking star. Like, if I wish you guys knew, you should bring Lily on here. She's funny. She's articulate. She also loves to cuss. And she she plays this 70-year-old badass pilot. So
can you try for us to be the 70-year-old pilot? I want to hear you try to like get gravel in your voice.
I can't.
You can't
like
at
I
all?
Would I would fuck up my I fucked up my voice for that audition.
Really?
Is that her natural voice though?
Mm-mm.
Or is she like actually putting that on? All right, I could
put
just like FY.
Yeah.
She might be like chewing cigars on during the audition or something, because it's pretty intense.
No.
Wow.
And she like I can't I mean all of these characters have like great screen time, like you really connect with them. I mean, Lily is, I don't know where she pulls these reads from, but fuck me. She is so good, and she's so funny. She's so funny to be on the volume with. Like, she's just fun. She has like a real sense of play, and she'll give you something different every take, which I think is dope. And and it's not just trash. It's not like you do four takes and the first two are good and the last two, you know, she's kind of fun. No, they're all good. They're all good. I love Lily. I'm like obsessed with her. In terms of the mocap, one of the first scenes I shot was the ladder, where Drummer lunges for the ladder, and don't do this, folks. Like, tell your daughters what you're about to do. I'm a pretty instinctual performer. But there was like a, I'm sure there's behind the scenes footage of this, but there was like a net that two guys were holding on to either side of, and I would lunge for the, and they thought I was just going to lunge and then they were going to swing my feet up. But I, Zach was like action, and I like jumped for it to make it like, make it kinetic. And they were like, again, I trust these guys a lot. We've done a lot of stunts together. But I guess afterwards they were, and I was like, everyone okay? And they were like, did you know she was going to jump? And I think one of them was like, I figured we had to be ready. Because we'd done like a couple takes and some like a couple rehearsals, obviously. And sometimes I jumped and sometimes I didn't. But yeah, like doing zero G stuff is wild. I think in one of the behind the scenes things that have been released, we called it like the zero G diaper, to like move people around. There was like a spider swing they cut holes in it. And so people would be like lifting me as I'm like shooting a gun. Yeah,
that's great.
Very cool.
Oh my god.
Just an FYI as well, I've seen some of the True Colors stuff that they've been posting as well. I saw Corwin's glasses get knocked off when you knocked the broom up as well, which don't try these stunts at home, so I can completely understand.
That's right. Corwin is a real trooper.
Yeah. God.
Erica, because this experience, was this more physically demanding compared to obviously True Colors? Like, we do make more of the actual physically rope.
Something just turned off on my side. I think maybe I have to put these babies on. Can you try talking? Yeah, there you go.
Yes, hello.
Okay, now I can hear you. Yeah, this is not my normal
setup.
This podcast
has been a roller coaster.
It's been a roller coaster. Yeah, something turned off.
Slower connections, everything. It's just like...
Yeah, here we are. Yes, much more physically demanding. In fact, I had to have surgery in the middle of it because I tore my meniscus on set doing a stunt. We're in a conference room and you're like jumping and landing on concrete, essentially. So like,
holy,
it could be better. But it was just kind of like a fluke. It truly was a fluke. It was like nobody's fault.
Yeah, but you're pointing this out like, oh yeah, I just twisted my ankle. you tore your meniscus.
Yeah, it was fucking gnarly, y'all. It was a bucket tear, and it had like I like landed. I was doing like some stupid like Dorothy shit with the mag boots to like click them on and then land and blah blah blah. And they wanted the animation of like your heels hitting, but like. Any dancer or athlete knows, like, you don't land and pivot on your heels. So anyways, it was a bucket tear, and it had flipped and lodged itself in my knee joint. So I couldn't straighten my knee. Like, I landed and I was like, something's wrong. And then I stood up and I couldn't straighten my knee. And I was like, something's very wrong. And so I had surgery, like, I don't know, like maybe 5 days later, because it was like, I couldn't straighten my leg.
Yeah
but luckily a meniscus removal is a pretty it's a pretty quick recovery. It's like 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, your meniscus, and it was a quick recovery. And
so quick recovery. But I mean, I was devastated because they were like, are we gonna have to recast? And I was like, frost.
Recast.
And he was like, we're not recasting.
Yeah,
I would have been sad.
Do you with Stephen Frost, you change his names usually because it changes from the porn name to the Frost. Or do you like...
For real, they're real interchangeable. I mean, at his place of work, he's Frost.
Yeah.
But to me, he's porn star Skeeter.
Oh my god. Sounds super cool, man.
He's super cool.
Because like on interviews, whenever I see Mr. Frost, and whenever I see him, he just seems very business forward. Like, he just like here's what I have before.
He's like coming in with his like black hoodie. He only wears black hoodies and is that guy.
Yeah, he just seems like very focused.
He really has you fooled.
he does come across very professional. I will say that. I've interacted with him on Twitter, and it's like, even the clips I've seen of him with like other things, he does come across as like pretty like,
yeah, like business minded. Not as like focused as Zach Garris is. Like Zach Garris, I feel like it's very like straightforward, tunnel vision kind of like focused kind of person. Whereas I feel like, yes, Mr. Denise is just very
Mr.
much.
Yeah, Mr. Denise.
Yeah, it's just
he's
kind of
really
like,
pulled one over on you.
Was that we get this Erica Mori and we don't get corporate Erica Mori, so it's like we see two different.
Oh, you don't get corporate Erica Mori. Yeah,
That's just
that is different.
Jeez.
I don't know. He is actually pretty disruptive on set because he's really? Like sharing. I mean, he's also very professional. Very, very, very professional. But he's like, you know, hanging out with the actors and like in the creative corner with like our animation lead and our writers, like, and they're like swapping like funny GIFs or like videos or whatever. And like poor Zach Andrews is like, okay, quiet on set. Quiet
on
set,
no.
God damn it.
Oh no.
Yeah. Frost is He's a good time girl.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Well, he had us fooled because I'm like, yeah, this guy's like professional. He's directing. He's like very, very focused. But now I'm not so sure anymore. I don't know about any directors anymore. Like, is Christopher Nolan actually focused? You know, who knows?
What I like about Frost, from what I've seen and from what I've heard from, you know, other departments, is like he knows what he wants, but kind of like Kara, he's like really open to collaboration, and he doesn't want or need to be the expert in every single area. Like, how can you be? You have to trust your animation lead to be the expert at what the fuck is going on in that department. Same with narrative, right? Same with cinematics, same with environment. And he does. Like, I think he, from what I have seen, he does trust the team that he has brought together to bring the best parts of the part that they own of the process to the fore. And I really think it shows.
Yeah. Dang.
Erica, this is completely unrelated as well. Are you part of SAG?
I'm not.
Oh.
You're not. So you're not part of the, you're having any disruption from the strikes or anything at the minute?
Well, I mean, I will be going SAG. So when the time is right. But this was a SAG project, but I think pretty much everybody except for folks who are already SAG, because Kara's SAG, did Taft-Hartley, which is basically like a stay of going union. I did that because there is not enough SAG work in Colorado, and I didn't feel like I had the momentum of SAG work yet to, like, in good faith, be like, I'm ready to join the union. I absolutely support what both the WGA and SAG are striking for. I think it's, like, the right thing.
Wow.
Studios better get to the table.
Yeah, honestly. It's crazy it's gone on this long, though. Like, it's insane. But
yeah.
Because the weird part is, like, most people haven't experienced it on this level, because, like, we've experienced it in the past. Like, in the mid-2000s, there was a strike with some of the TV shows getting affected, and then the mid, like, 2010s, like, even Life is Strange got affected with the SAG strikes, but, like, now you have both SAG and the writer's strike happening at the same time, so it's pretty crazy to have it at the same time, but I didn't know if you were SAG yet or not. So
no, I'm not SAG yet. And the reason why I felt comfortable doing this interview, because I'm not interested in scabbing or whatever, is video games. So interactive media is on a different contract that was negotiated before. I did see, though, because I read what the what SAG presented for a contract during negotiations to the studios, and there was something about motion capture being considered actual performance on there, because I mean, film and television do a ton of motion capture in like really specific genres, And that was something that the studios rejected. But I think it is absolutely the right thing to do. I think that the sort of the argument that it's just all of these rich actors wanting to get richer has been like clearly shown to be absolute bullshit. That's not what it means to be a working actor. You know, most actors, I have a side job, you know, like I can't make a living just acting. And I was in a BAFTA nominated game, you know,
which you should have won. Just saying. But yeah,
I don't know. Returnal is pretty dope. So...
just saying, Alex Chen is just like light years ahead of everything there, but just like saying,
sure. But yeah, I think that it's something that I like absolutely hope gets resolved. There's a lot at stake here. And I do feel like really lucky to be like in the industry during this moment to, you know, be whatever small part of it I can be. And, you know I will benefit from like the union and the people in the union sacrificing their living wage right now. Like that's stewardship. Like that's how an industry can get better or can get back to what it kind of historically was, where you could raise a family, retire, have a good life, and never be in a blockbuster movie or never be, you know, first on the call sheet, because it takes a fucking village. And to try and devalue the work that writers and performers bring to this process is just so disappointing, and like pretty repulsive.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you got like a feeling about how I feel about.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I'm very subtle.
Adam, do you have any other questions?
Way too big of a, but okay. Let's put it this way, very very briefly, because you do have to be on the time crunch here. So, little bit of sidebar, and we can edit this question out if you're like, I don't really have an opinion.
Setup is great for this. Go on, continue.
So I don't know if you've seen on Twitter or social media, or you're aware of it, that there were technical issues with releasing some episodes of The Expanse. You are like friends with the directors, you're friends with people who were involved in the development of this game. And you might see on Twitter and Reddit and all that people are just clearly upset. Like even I was a little bit upset at like, wow, these episodes aren't releasing. You're directly involved, you know the people that are doing this thing. Like what kind of message do you have that we should give these developers some leeway, or there's a lot of other things? Like what are your thoughts on that?
I can definitely understand both sides of it. Like these fans, these players paid good money for a product, and it wasn't delivered. Like it's as simple as that. And so I think that the frustration is really valid. I think it's really valid. I, as a consumer, could be pissed. So I don't think that's like wrong. However, I would also say that like the devs killed themselves for this game. Like they love this game.
Yeah.
And it's certainly never, I don't think it's ever the intention to like send out something that's less than perfect. And it does happen. Like I think I learn every day how wild this industry is, how crunched the timelines can be. And I would just say like, this wasn't done. I know it wasn't done intentionally, maliciously, and I know, like, the little, like, tweets or updates of, like, the team is working on it. They are working on it. And I know that's, like, easier for me to say because I know these people, but, like, this isn't just a job to them.
Right.
Like, they care about the output. They care about the user experience, and it's never just, like, one person's fault or one department's fault. Like, it's a pipeline, right? It's like an ecosystem. And so, like, there has to be, like, groups of teams talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes things don't go as planned. I think we all experience that in different ways in our life. And so, unfortunately, you know, the game for our episode 2 didn't launch the way that anybody hoped for. And so, yeah, like, patience and a little empathy is, I think, always beneficial. And your frustration is valid. It's totally valid. I think, though, that when it's patched and you're gonna have a good time.
Yeah.
No, I mean obviously incredibly biased, but I think it's gonna be worth the wait. And
yeah, and
I'm sorry, that's a shitty experience for everybody.
Yeah, and I understand you can't really speak for developers. Like, I'm sure they have what they would say, but, you know, it's both sides. I think both need to understand each other, and just it is what it is.
I mean, you know that feeling of, like, when your heart falls into your ass. I guarantee that's the feeling that these devs had when they realized that, like, what they pushed out wasn't functional for a lot of players. Like, they felt panicked and awful and are just trying to scramble to fix it.
Yeah. Well,
terrible feeling.
On that note, I think it's a perfect way to end. So wrap up here. Yeah,
terrible note.
We'll wrap up here. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. As this episode will come out earlier than you expect because we've done it as a one-off special. It's heavily Expanse focused, but it's one of those. I think this is one of the first episodes we've spoken about where we've not done Life is Strange, like, as a large proportion of the episode. So heavily dedicated to the Expanse. But yeah, I hope you all enjoyed it. If you are new here as well, as always, please do drop a subscribe, turn on notifications, like, and share with your friends. Helps keep up to date with the channel, helps keep support the channel. And also, Strangecast is available on all podcast services. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. We're on them all there. And in the comments as well, if you've been telling up how many times Erica has sworn, just drop it in there as well, just so we know, because it'll be quite the...
five.
Yeah, just the five. Erica Mori, thank you for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure having you back on here and to catch up with things. And honestly, it's great to have you on here, and we're glad that you came on as well. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We'll be keeping up to date with the Expanse as well as it goes on. Go and tweet at Stephen Frost, or his porn name, as you've just learned during this entire episode. So you can tweet at him that as well, and he'll wonder where it's come from and eventually locate the source of this video. But until next... can't take it seriously. And he's going to tweet him that name now. He's going to be like, who told him this? Anyway, I hope you all enjoyed the video. Take care, guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.